Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Augusta, Messiah Rhodes, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warnoff. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Does your employer offer to match donations to nonprofit organizations? If so, before your next donation to WORT, please obtain a matching gift form from your employer and include it with your donation. As a 501c3 organization, WORT qualifies for matching gifts from employers. WORT Community Radio thanks its listener sponsors and their employers who match their gifts. Il n'est pas une boîte qu'il ne fréquentait.
Welcome to Madison Labor Radio. Labor Radio is dedicated to bringing news, information, and cultural events focused on working people and the labor movement to the Madison area and surrounding communities. I am Amy Monluck, a member of MTI. Your support is necessary to make Labor Radio and all the great programming on WORT possible.
Hi, I'm Scott McCullough, a member of AFT 4848, the Wisconsin Professional Employees Council. Today we learn how cuts to the Veterans Administration will affect the VA in Madison, share a report on the recent nationwide rallies by city letter carriers, discover what's behind the strike by workers in Oshkosh, discuss statements from the UAW President Sean Fain on impacts on U.S. auto industry jobs, and much more.
In an abrupt move against organized labor late Thursday night, President Trump signed an executive order eliminating collective bargaining for most federal employees across the nation. Firefighters and law enforcement were exempted.
American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE National President Everett Kelly today issued the following statement. President Trump's latest executive order is a disgraceful and retaliatory attack on the rights of hundreds of thousands of patriotic American civil servants, nearly one-third of whom are veterans, simply because they are members of a union that stands up to his harmful policies. AFGE is preparing immediate legal action and will fight relentlessly to protect our rights, our members, and all working Americans from these unprecedented attacks. AFL-CIO President Liz Shuler posted the following press release on the union website. Straight out of Project 2025, this executive order is the very definition of union busting. To every American who cares about the federal freedom of all workers, now is the time to be even louder. Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Janine Ramsey.
The South Central Federation of Labor, or SCFL, has endorsed candidates for the April 1st election. For the full slate of endorsements, go to scfl.org. Bill Franks, a SCFL delegate, lays out the statewide endorsements.
This is Bill Franks. I'm a delegate for the South Central Federation of Labor, better known as the Fed. I'm here to talk about the endorsements that the Fed has provided to the April 1st election. These are the endorsements based on what the Fed, which vets candidates for each of the elections through its political action committee, the COPE committee. First of all, let's take the big race that we're hearing about that has all this money spent in it, the Supreme Court race. The Fed endorses Judge Susan Crawford, who is a circuit court judge, and she's been on the bench for a while. She's a very good person in terms of the issues as they pertain to labor. For the Department of Public Instruction, they've endorsed Dr. Jill Underley, who is the incumbent in this race. There are also some other endorsements, depending upon where you live. Be sure to get out there and vote and do your civic duty.
The Veterans Administration recently announced that they will cut up to 83,000 positions nationwide. The impact on the VA in Madison is already being felt. Labor Radio spoke with William Townsend, the president of the American Federation of Government Employees, or AFGE, Local 1732, a veteran himself, about what is going on.
What's been happening at the VA here in Madison since President Trump took office?
Chaos, anger, fear, uncertainty is the atmosphere that we're living in right now.
What's happened?
Initially, we had the termination of probationary employees. That was step one. Step two was the email that went out by Mr. Musk that wanted us to explain what we do, give us 5 bullet points as to what you do, which was humiliating.
How many people work at the VA in Madison?
A little bit over 3,000.
What kind of jobs do those workers do?
Doctors, nurses, radiologists, housekeepers, food service workers, IT people, dozens and dozens of different jobs, all to ensure that veterans are being cared for.
How many workers in Madison have been impacted directly by the cuts and the threats?
Every last one of us. Let's start with the probationary employees that were terminated. Now, these employees have been reinstated. However, they're not actually working. They've all been placed on administrative leave. There's one thing to say, okay, we're going to get rid of these workers. Then there's another thing that says, okay, well, we're going to have a hiring freeze now where you cannot backfill these positions. We complained and said, hey, wait a minute, hold on, what do you mean you're not hiring people? This is the VA. You got to think about veterans care. So then they came out with these exemption lists and, oh, well, if you're a doctor or a nurse or you fall in one of these exempted categories, then you're not going to be eligible for the deferred resignation. You're supposed to be exempt from any type of terminations. Now, this was before Secretary Collins came out and said that he was going to reduce the VA workforce by 83,000 employees. What this administration wants to do is to limit the VA's ability to care for veterans so that they can have the excuse saying, oh, well, veterans are not getting seen in a timely manner, or veterans don't have the facilities to go to, so we're going to privatize this to outside medical facilities. Most of the veterans I've ever talked to always said, hey, we want our VA. We don't want outside providers.
Who does the VA serve?
The men and women that serve this country. That's who we serve.
What kinds of services are provided?
Healthcare, especially mental health, home assistance, because there's a lot of homeless veterans, veterans benefits. We offer home assistance and help veterans buy a house. There's a lot of things that the VA offer to veterans in order to make sure that they are being cared for. Now, I'm not going to buy into that proposition that these 83,000 cuts are not going to affect veterans care. Yes, it will affect veterans care.
Why do you think they're doing this?
That's a good question. I've been racking my brains to try to figure out why would anybody, especially our senator like Senator Johnson or congressional representative down in Janesville. I find it hard when I go and I speak with these people and they say, oh, yeah, we love our veterans. Well, if you love your veterans, then how can you not care for the people that take care of the veterans? Why are they doing this? Maybe it's because they want to find that $2 trillion to give to the billionaires. Maybe it's because of the fact that you have insurance companies and major national hospitals that look at the VA and they look at the income they can generate from the taxpayers by having the VA being privatized. Maybe that's it.
What can listeners do?
Stand up, speak out, let your congressman know how the actions being taken by this administration is impacting veterans and impacting veterans care.
That was William Townsend, the AFGE 1732 president, reporting for Labor Radio. This is Janine Ramsey.
The Letter Carriers Union and supporters rallied this week in Madison against Trump administration calls to overturn the U.S. Postal Service. Greg Jaboski reports.
Earlier this week, U.S. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy, who has not exactly been considered a progressive friend of labor throughout his five-year term, resigned his post, reportedly because massive changes by executive order and administrative decree that had been flying from the desks of President Donald Trump and junior chief executive Elon Musk go too far even for DeJoy. This is merely the latest in a flurry of moves directed at USPS by the Trump administration. Postal workers and supporters of the U.S. Postal Service have not kept silent, however.
Hands off our Postal Service!
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 Last Sunday, March 23rd, over 100 people gathered in front of the main Madison Post Office on Milwaukee Street to demand hands off the post office. The action was called by the National Association of Letter Carriers. The pouring rain on Sunday didn't seem to dampen the crowd. There were a lot of letter carriers here, after all. Dave Golding, a letter carrier and the president of NALC Branch 507, told why people were there and tried to make sense out of what is coming out of D.C.
People are very passionate about this issue. The mail service is a functional part of every single American's lives, and we take the threat that Trump poses very, very seriously. The goal has always been to siphon off the parts of the Postal Service that are profitable and then put that off to private entities and then let the rest of it wither on the vine, because the government alone wouldn't be able to support that.
Melissa Ratcliffe, the state senator for District 16, was there and had this to say.
They want to create chaos throughout our country, and they want to bring that to a postal service near us, all throughout the United States, and we are fighting back saying hell no.
Golding says the public pressure to support postal workers in USPS has worked and will continue to work.
Everybody should call their congressperson if they're concerned about this. Congress does listen to these messages. They care about this stuff. They want to know what public opinion is like. If people are not sure about that, they should look at the public outcry that came out since Trump first, this executive order was first proposed. We still haven't had anything. I don't think that was an accident. I think Trump is very mindful of the backlash that this could receive. So people can keep that up.
That was Dave Golding, president of NALC Branch 507, speaking Sunday at a picket and rally at the Milwaukee Street Post Office in Madison.
Hey! U.S. mail not for sale!
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 For Labor Radio, I'm Greg Jaboski.
Community members and organized labor from around the state gathered at the Madison Labor Temple on Saturday to rally in the waning days of an election for a new Wisconsin Supreme Court justice. The event, which was organized by the South Central Federation of Labor, centered around a unified call, "Fight Back Against the Billionaire Attack." Labor Radio has the story.
A coalition of workers, community members, and activists gathered at the Madison Labor Temple over the weekend to demonstrate against the ongoing interference of Elon Musk and other billionaires in the operations of civil government at the federal and state level, as well as to rally support for pro-worker candidate Susan Crawford in the waning days of a hotly contested state Supreme Court election, scheduled to take place on April 1st. Musk has spent $20 million on the race out of his own pocket and through at least two outside campaign finance organizations in support of Crawford's opponent, conservative Judge Brad Schimel, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Speaking at Saturday's rally, Capital Times associate editor John Nichols said that countering such large-scale individual spending in Wisconsin state politics is not an unfamiliar thing.
We've been out in the cold before, haven't we?
Yes!
We've been out in the cold a long time.
Yes!
Back in February of 2011, we were out in the cold. But in the state of Wisconsin, we undid their billionaire attack. We got Scott Walker out of the governorship.
Yeah!
In addition to funneling money to Schimel's campaign, Musk has hinted at incentivizing voters directly by promising, in a now-deleted post on his social media platform, X, to cut a $1 million check to two attendees who showed proof of voting in the election at an event the billionaire is holding in Wisconsin this upcoming Sunday, an act that legal experts say would clearly violate Wisconsin's state campaign finance law. State Attorney General Josh Call announced earlier today that he would be seeking a court order to block the distribution of the checks. As the director at the helm of the extra-legal Department of Government Efficiency, Musk has also become the public face of the liquidation of services administered by the federal government, another major theme of the Saturday rally. Jessica LaPointe, president of AFGE Council 220, which represents workers at the Social Security Administration, countered Musk's narrative that tax-funded federal services were anything other than hard-earned benefits.
Let us be clear. The goal is to take away America's earned benefits. It doesn't matter that we've all paid into the Social Security pot our entire working lives, based on the promise of a safe and secure retirement protected from the volatility of the stock market. The administration is trying to break that promise in order to give Social Security away to Wall Street and to fund the tax cuts of the richest 0.1%. Are we going to let that happen?
No! At the same time, services that support millions of Americans are under attack, so are the thousands of workers that support those services. AFGE Local 1732 President William Townsend, who represented workers from the city's VA hospital at the rally, noted how such attacks will affect those that depend on their labor.
But yet and still, this man, Secretary Collins, is going to say, oh, don't worry, veterans, nothing's going to happen. Your benefits are going to be fine. Your health care is going to be fine. How is my health care going to be fine if you cutting 23,000 positions? Yeah. That's not right.
And the attacks show no signs of slowing, at least not for now. Last night, the Trump administration announced an executive order ending the collective bargaining rights of workers at most federal agencies, a move which will affect hundreds of thousands of employees. The order is a massive expansion of the assault on unionized federal workers, which began with the cancellation of the TSA's collective bargaining agreement earlier this month. Despite the mounting setbacks, Daryl English, president of the AFGE local that represents TSA officers in Wisconsin and Illinois, left attendees with words of encouragement.
We're going to always be fighting with you, and we're not afraid to stand up. Because this is the fight right here. There is no tomorrow if we don't stand up today.
You have been listening to the voices of community members and organizers in Wisconsin, rallying a response to billionaire attacks on civil government. Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Sean Hagerup.
Sean Fain, president of the United Auto Workers, spoke about free trade and the loss of manufacturing jobs in the United States.
This week, UAW released a video about trade policy. Sean Fain assessed the impact of the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, in the 1992 presidential election.
Let's look at what's happened since NAFTA passed. Over 90,000 manufacturing facilities have disappeared in the United States, wrecking communities, ripping families apart, and leaving workers on unemployment or struggling to survive on low-wage jobs.
Fain described job loss under free trade and the need to renegotiate NAFTA.
Economists and talking heads want to say that tariffs are bad for the economy. You know what's bad for the economy? Letting corporations ship jobs to other countries where workers make $3 an hour so the company can sell a truck for $100,000 and pocket the savings, while American workers and Mexican workers scrape to get by. There isn't a state in this country that hasn't been devastated by the free trade disaster of the last 33 years.
The costs of NAFTA were economic devastation on the communities where the plants closed.
The status quo is killing us. Some economists are trying to scare anyone, saying that the cost of tariffs will be passed on to working Americans. But the cost of NAFTA was passed on to working Americans in the form of plant closures, deaths of despair, and economic devastation. We feel its effects every day. Free trade isn't free, It's a disaster, and it's time to end it. The experts said NAFTA would help the working class. They were wrong. NAFTA sucks, and it's time to fix our broken trade laws.
The UAW will follow the effects of the expected auto tariffs that could be a step towards ending the free trade disaster inaugurated by NAFTA 33 years ago. This story was sourced from the UAW. Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Carol Weidel.
Workers at UAW Local 291 at Cummins in Oshkosh are on strike. Labor Radio spoke today with the local's president.
Around 90 workers at Cummins Incorporated in Oshkosh, represented by United Auto Workers Local 291, have been on strike for over a week. Cummins, which purchased the plant from Meritor in 2022, makes components for military and heavy construction equipment. The union's five-year contract ended in January, and the company is claiming they're still bargaining in good faith, but the union sees otherwise and took to the picket line. Ryan Compton, the president of UAW Local 291, spoke today to Labor Radio. Compton described the Cummins management bargaining actions, or inactions, that have led to the strike.
Our contract expired on January 29th of this year, and so far the company has met with us 9 times and 1 time virtually. Their first meeting date with us was the 28th of January. So we met with them 3 times in January, 3 times in March, and then as of last Tuesday at noon, the next time we can meet with them that they're giving us a chance to meet is April 1st virtually, and then April 22nd, 23rd, and 24th in person.
Compton described what has been discussed at bargaining so far.
We have had some offers for them, but the biggest sticking points we have right now is mandatory Saturdays and the use of temporary labor. Previous to that, they did offer a 6-month extension with no monetary gains, and we denied that. So we've tossed proposals back around, but it is just, it's hard to get a contract done when you're meeting 3 times in a month and then you have to wait a month, 3 times and then you have to wait a month. That's just our biggest issue right now, is getting them to the table. That's all we want, is to get them to the table.
This recalcitrance by Cummins management is surprising, says Compton, as work at the Oshkosh plant has been increasing as of late.
Previous to this, I mean, they brought up a lot of work actually from North Carolina, and there's no indication of them wanting to move at all. In fact, they're putting work into this place. So our biggest thing is we just need them to get to the table and take this seriously and sit down and get this thing done.
Compton welcomes the community to come and support workers on the picket line.
Our hours of striking are from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. They could always come to the local union hall, which is right across the street from the plant, if they wanted to help picket. That's always, always been appreciated for anybody that wants to help picket.
That was Ryan Compton of UAW Local 291. The local's union hall for the Cummins plant is located at 1118 High Street in Oshkosh, and the Cummins plant where they're picketing is at 4325 State Road 91. For Labor Radio, I'm Greg Jaboski.
A Florida child labor bill would let minors as young as 14 work overnight. Carol Weidel has the story.
Florida teens could work night shifts and 8 hours without a meal break, according to a controversial child labor bill that passed its first Senate committee on Tuesday. Florida Senator Jay Collins wants to continue the Republican-led legislature's efforts from last year to loosen child labor laws. Under this bill, SB 918, all 16-year-olds could work overnight and without a break after working for 8 hours, even while school is in session. If passed, the measure would also apply to 14-year-olds enrolled in virtual school. Democratic Senator Carlos Guillermo Smith argues this is an attempt to swap out deported immigrant labor with child labor.
He questioned a DeSantis quote from last week when the governor questioned why members of the left say we need to import foreigners illegally when teenagers used to work at resorts. College students could do this stuff. States have historically played an important role in setting child labor standards that exceed minimum federal standards set by the 1938 Fair Labor Standards Act, or FLSA. Though the FLSA governs work hours for minors under age 16 and outlines prohibitively hazardous occupations for minors under age 18, many other safeguards, like rest breaks or protections from overnight shifts for 13-year-olds, are absent from the federal law and left up to the states. In 2024, a Wisconsin attempt to increase child labor by eliminating work permits for 14 and 15-year-olds passed both chambers, but Governor Tony Evers vetoed the bill. Sources for this story are the Floridian, Pensacola News Journal, and the Economic Policy Institute. Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Carol Weidel.
City letter carriers have been working without a national contract since May of 2023. Keith Steffen has some details about a recent arbitration award.
The National Association of Letter Carriers had been negotiating a new national contract with the U.S. Postal Service for nearly 2 years. After the union membership overwhelmingly voted to reject the tentative agreement, the contract went to mandatory binding arbitration. The arbitration award was released on March 24th. The award was not significantly different from the tentative agreement that was voted down. 3 general wage increases and 6 COLAs, or cost of living adjustments, were awarded. Arbitrator Nolan awarded general wage increases of 1.3% starting in November 2023 and 1.4% starting in November 2024, both paid retroactively, and 1.5% in November 2025. The award also provides for 6 COLAs that are a proportion of actual inflation. 4 of those COLAs will be paid retroactively. Lower-tier non-career employees called city carrier assistants will receive additional increases to compensate for a lack of COLAs. The pay table had other improvements as well. The no-layoff clause remains in the contract. It protects letter carriers after 6 years of service as a career employee. The existing prohibition against contracting out or privatizing city carrier work is continued for the duration of the new national agreement. City letter carriers nationwide have expressed disappointment that the arbitration award is not much different from the rejected tentative agreement. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy resigned the day before the award was released, and the union expects that a new Postmaster General will be appointed soon. The legal process is that the Postal Board of Governors selects and appoints the Postmaster General, or PMG, who then also sits on the board. The PMG does not serve at the president's pleasure and can only be dismissed by the Board of Governors. It remains to be seen whether the administration attempts to override the PMG appointment process or the new contract. I am Keith Steffen for Labor Radio.
Nurses at Unity Point Meritor Hospital in Madison, represented by SEIU Wisconsin, are holding an informational picket on April 8th, highlighting critical issues including safety, wages, and dignified working conditions. That's a nurse's informational picket at Meritor Hospital, Tuesday, April 8th, from 1 to 5 in the afternoon, starting at Southbrook and Mound Streets in Madison.
I'm Amy Monluck. Thank you to the Labor Radio Collective, including reporters Greg Jabowski, Janine Ramsey, Carol Weidel, Sean Hagerup, Bryant Navinska-Lois, Carlos Davalos, Assistant Robin G., and Damage Control Specialist Joanne Powers. Special thanks to Keith Steffen, our reader coordinator, and to all of our readers and members of IBEW Local 2304, WORT Staff Collective.
And I'm Scott McCullough. We would also like to thank all of our generous contributors to Labor Radio and WORT. Please stay tuned for the Blues Cruise with Dave Watts and the Professor, Bill Clark.
listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
WORT is excited to be in our 50th year, and to help celebrate, we are hosting the opening night of Madison's newest venue, the Atwood Music Hall. Join us on Friday, June 13th, for a great night honoring Clyde Stubblefield. The night features performances from Mama Dig Down's Brass Band, The Funky JBs, VO5, Rare Element, DJ Trevor Banks, and Kaboom Box. Andy Moore from the Friday 8 o'clock Buzz will host the evening celebrating 50 years of WORT and the grand opening of Madison's newest venue at 1925 Winnebago Street. Proceeds from the evening benefit WORT. Tickets are $25 in advance and available now at theatwoodmusichall.com. Be sure to shine up your dancing shoes and grab your tickets before they're gone.
For over 10 years, Mama Cares has been there for local musicians in their time of need, whether to help with medical expenses or other personal calamities. Madison Area Music Association invites you to Mama Cares' 10th Anniversary Ball, Sunday, March 30th, from 3 to 8 p.m. at the High Noon, featuring live performances by Sam Ness, Gin Chocolate and Bottle Rockets, and the Jimmies. Help your local musicians and enjoy some live music at the Mama Cares 10th Anniversary Ball, Sunday, March 30th, from